Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 283rd edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, other fabulous moments. You can get me and other writers over at onceametro.com, as well as part of the whole SB Nation family. Chat room is open. Come on in. Talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. And joining me right now is Mr. Robert Hay. Later on, Carter Krishnar will be joining us as well to discuss this interesting topic that was brought to light on FoxSoccer.com by Ryan Rosenblatt. Of course, he's formerly of SB Nation, now with Fox Soccer. .com. And all I can say is that, you know, there are some things that I don't know if it's true that it happened. It probably is. Maybe certain things that we're not aware of. But Robert, as we talk about this interesting article that came out last week, apparently the writing was on the wall for MLS at the end of the 2001 season. It seemed like it was about to be curtains for this league when, of course, you lost both Florida teams at the time, which was the old Miami Fusion and, of course, one of the original members of this league, the former Tampa Bay Mutiny. Did you read this article? What did you think about it? And do you think there's any truth that this league was ready to close shop back then?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Daniel. It's always a blast. It was an interesting article, and you know, my background working in D.C. and in politics for at the time, although no longer is, whenever there's a story that comes out, my first question is, why does it come out now? You know, I don't believe in coincidences and things like that. So the timing is really interesting. It came out amidst this news of, you know, MLS is now looking to expand to 28 teams by 2020, if I get my timeline correct. And there's, you know, the attendance ticked up to about 3% over this time last year. And, you know, there's this discussion about the MLS game being healthier than ever. So the timing of this is interesting, where you have this story about the league almost folding and it being essentially saved by one man who, by the way, the story was broken by – it sounded like an interview by his son, who now is an owner with FC Dallas. So let's remember that's a little bit self-serving for the family, which I don't blame him for doing. So, it's just the timing is very interesting kind of thing. But you know what? I do believe it. I was not, unlike yourself and some others, one of the people who watched MLS from the beginning. But, you know, the league was going through some troubles. It was struggling to find an identity, and it doesn't surprise me that they went through a time where, with the two franchises closing, people seem to think Florida's a bellwether. So the fact that you have your two Florida franchises going under would signal serious trouble for the league. So, I haven't seen anything else that confirms the story. Nobody else has said anything else. But if you came up to me on the street and said, hey, MLS was, you know, basically shut down for a few hours because of this, I'd believe it based on its history.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I got to say this, Robert, and here it's actually from Dan Hunt, one of Lamar's two sons. Of course, let's not forget the family not only involved in Major League Soccer, but also in the NFL with the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, at the time, it was Lamar Hunt running FC Dallas. Of course, the family is based in Dallas, Texas. Also, running Kansas City Chiefs in the NFL. And at the time, they did own at – they were the Kansas City Wizards, of course, now supporting Kansas City, and the Columbus Crew. And, of course, this is where I believe in 2001, Lamar Hunt actually built the very first soccer-specific stadium in Major League Soccer, then known as Columbus Crew Stadium, now known as Mountain Stadium. And while you would have to say that it's a little bit interesting – when this story just popped out, and this came out, of course, April 11th last week. I mean, there is a lot of questions here that has to be asked. And the question, of course, is what Dan said, that the league had decided that it would cease operations that year and were preparing the paperwork for closing. So in theory, that, I mean, in your mind, does that sound like the league was ready to close up shop? Does that sound like that it's ready to start digging the grave?
Well, I mean, it's certainly plausible. I mean, again, you lose two franchises in cities that are supposed to be very strong soccer cities. You know, Florida has always been seen as kind of the golden land for soccer for a number of reasons. So you lose those two. I mean, in a small league, anytime you have franchises shut down and nothing to replace them, I mean, you're losing a large source of revenue. And when Carter comes on, I mean, he has a good perspective on that from his NASL days. So, I mean, financially, it's certainly plausible. I mean, there's no doubt that there was financial troubles. This isn't the MLS that you see today where, you know, it's not exactly – there's money. They're not floating in money, but there's money. But so it's plausible. I mean, you didn't have soccer-specific stadiums. You were sharing with the NFL. A lot of places you had weird rules. And you didn't have the widespread television coverage that you do now of soccer in general. So it was very much a niche sport. And you had seen the NASL fail a couple of years ago. The 94 World Cup was a success, but, you know, it's hard to translate that success into a league where you're not seeing world-class players every day. And that's another thing. I mean, not exactly household names in a lot of cases with some of these players. So it's certainly plausible. There's no doubt about that, that it's plausible that the league was close to, if not already, shut down. And I think there's no doubt about that, that the Hunt family has been great for soccer in the United States. I mean, rightfully so, the U.S. Open Trophy is the Lamar Hunt Trophy. And you know, he and, you know, now his family is doing a lot for the sport. You know, I'm kind of curious, that, you know, to see what else, you know, if we hear anything else about this story, whether anybody corroborates it. Excuse me, I can't speak tonight.
Okay.
Or if there's some other voices that come out and say, well, you know, that's not exactly true. There were some other people involved or, you know, something like that. But at the end of the day, if it is true, I mean, if it was this one person who had the clout and the ability to keep the league alive, then I think that we're doing him almost a disservice by not recognizing him more in this league.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Open Cup is dedicated to him. They have his name on the trophy. They have his name, you know, basically everything and everything that's involving him. With our U.S. Open Cup tournament. So, you know, that's a nice gesture there. But while it was interesting to see that not just Lamar Hunt, apparently not only him calling back all the owners to still remain a part of this. I mean, let's not forget, Robert Kraft is the only one to remain a part of the league as a single club owner when he, you know, he's still running the Revolution at Gillette Stadium and playing those games at Gillette Stadium. And, of course, let's not forget Alan Anschutz, Mr. Anschutz, Phil Anschutz, excuse me. I was going to say Alan Rothenberg, but that's not true. Phil Anschutz, I mean, he took on the majority of the clubs that lost a lot of owners. I mean, I believe he took over D.C. at a particular point in time. The Metro Stars lost Metro Media as an ownership group. You know, Chicago Fire lost their ownership group as well. And, you know, not only running Los Angeles, but also at the time San Jose. And, you know, there was also a World Cup that had to be played in 2002 in South Korea and Japan. And, of course, you know, for Bruce Arena, you know, wondered at that time if he was even, you know, kept in the loop as the head coach of the men's national team. You know, where were the players going to come from? I mean, half the players, I don't even know if half the players, but maybe a quarter of the players coming from Europe and the rest are coming from Major League Soccer. And, you know, where were they going to go? You know, a lot of question marks if this league was going to fall apart and go under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, I think when we think about business visionaries, we talk about people like a Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or someone like that. We talk about these people who have a vision, who looked past what they saw and saw what could be. And while not to the same level, obviously, as an Apple, I think a lot of these guys, we tend to forget that sports, soccer is a business. And in a sense, these owners who kept the league afloat they made a very smart business decision. The fact that they put in their income and their time to breathe some life into this league obviously has paid off financially for them, no doubt about that. So from that perspective, they're very smart business people, and it was a good gamble for them to do. So in that sense, I think they should be commended for making a smart business decision. You know, was it all for love of the game? Maybe some of it, I'm sure, but the dollars and cents in the long run probably made sense for them as well. But you know, that's not to take anything away from them. I mean, this is the league was smart enough to bring in some people who would, were smart enough to would. Run these franchises in a way that would keep them solvent, keep the league solvent. The league made some choices in terms of ownership, that the league would own the franchises and, give out the ownership rights and all that stuff to keep it solvent, to not fall into the same path as the old NASL. And again, when Carter comes on, Carter wrote an excellent book just recently about NASL and its management practices. And you see almost a path that MLS could have taken in this situation, and if it would have gone down that path, it would not probably be solvent today. It would not have been, it would not be the Division I league or the successful league it is. I think what happened when you reach this low point for the league, you had a good combination of the people running the league were brought in the right people, the right owners to own these franchises. They had a plan to eventually wean them off of owning multiple franchises and basically controlling. The league, having a handful of people controlling the league and spreading it out to the point where they increase value slowly, for some too slowly, for some, too fast. But, they increase the value of the league to the point where it's solvent, it's able to stand on its own, and now you're bringing in investors from across the world to invest in teams and bring in some stars. Now, the debate is no longer like where are the players coming from. It's are we bringing in too many players from Europe? Are we bringing in too many players who play in MLS? And that's a healthier debate to have than, are we going to be able to prepare our players for the World Cup? So, it wasn't perfect along the way. I think there's some justifiable criticism for some of the business practices that had been done. But if you look at it in the long term, 2016, 15 years out, the league's made some pretty smart choices in order to keep itself afloat. And, you're now looking at a league where, unless there's some terribly buried financial messes that nobody knows about, this is a league that'll be here for a while because it's a stable league.
Yeah, absolutely. The league is in a better position. I agree with you. I think the league right now is in a healthy financial position. And that's the one thing I think I still feel a little nervous about. And I'll tell you why. Because right now, I think that at this particular moment, Major League Soccer is going very well. I think what they're doing is some good practices. And at the same time, there are some practices that I don't agree with. But that doesn't mean that I hate on my league. I don't. The truth is I want my league to improve. I want just our league, I should say, because you are a part of this as well, rooting for DC United. Of course, that's how you got started. I got started with the Metro Stars and now, of course, New York Red Bulls. But I think that the truth is that we hope, and while we will agree on some things what the league does and we'll disagree on some things what the league does, the truth is that we are happy that the league is still here. We all want this league to be profitable, to be entertaining, and to remain here past 20 years. I mean, right now, it is a miracle at this moment in time that this league is still here, because I think you can agree with me. There's a moment where maybe you felt, when's the bottom going to drop? When all of a sudden all this good moment, this good feeling is going to disappear? And you pray to God it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And every debate should be healthy on what the future should be for this league. And I think right now, Robert, we're having ourselves a pretty interesting moment where, you know, at the time I heard about this and you got a little nervous back then at the end of 2001 because you don't know where the league was going to go to. And, you know, there goes Florida. And now look at Orlando coming in, bringing Florida back to MLS. Joining us right now, of course, Kartik Krishnayar with World Soccer Talk, the former NASL communications officer. And Kartik, as we're talking about this article, and I know you read this article, but I have to ask you this. Were you surprised that, you know, this was, or do you feel that this article is actually legitimate, that there was a moment that it could have been over after 5-6 years?
Ryan Rosenblatt, a colleague of mine, former colleague of mine, I believe it's legitimate. I don't see why he would say otherwise. I think that the league was very close to shutting its doors. I didn't realize quite how close they were until he wrote this article, but yes, they were close. And it's a very fortunate thing, a good thing for American soccer, that they're still around. I mean, it's amazing where MLS is now and kind of the pageantry of the league and the passion around so many of the supporters. Daniel, you'll experience it in a couple of weeks here in Orlando or here in Florida when you see Orlando. Hopefully the fans are better behaved than they were yesterday, I have to admit, getting out of the stadium yesterday.
Well, Baltimore-Toledo does get fraud penalties, so I can't help you there, you know.
I didn't enjoy myself. I'll just take the liberty here since we're on that subject that we all make mistakes as writers, as journalists, particularly people who are covering games at games. And I had not seen – look, it happened bang, bang. You're in a press box game. You know how this is, Robert. You know how it is. I did not. And because also the home team is kind of selective about if something goes their way that shouldn't in, like, exposing you to information, I didn't realize that Molino had handled the ball, which he very clearly did. The goal shouldn't have counted until after the game. So I was as incensed because I thought New England had essentially stolen a point when, in fact, I realized it was a fair result because it should have been 1-1. It ended up being 2-2 because of the makeup call. But I'll just get that out of the way. So then I apologize and put on and said, hey, guys, I'm in the press box. I didn't see the replay. So I'm sorry type of thing. I think the league was able to, in 2002, 2003, 2004, really consolidate and then go back into a growth phase. I think the real victims, though, from a standpoint of the league having to go into that consolidation mode and cost-cutting mode, were, Robert, you'll appreciate this, were D.C. United and were the Chicago Fire. Because I think what ended up happening is D.C. and Chicago had to let a lot of players go as they bumped up against the salary cap, younger players, U.S. national team players, et cetera, and were not able to buy adequate replacements. And I think while we're going to praise MLS for keeping it going and pro soccer is at a point right now in this country where it's never been, and that has a lot to do with the dedication of MLS owners and the leadership of Don Garber and Sunil Gulati and others, those two markets have never quite recovered. D.C. United is less relevant and less popular now than they were in 2001. Chicago, the Chicago Fire, are less relevant and less popular now than they were in 2001. And there was no professional soccer team in Orlando in 2001. Now they're averaging 40,000 a game. Vancouver had a USL team that was called the 86ers, getting about 2,500 people a game. They rebranded as the Whitecaps. Now they've got this great success story. Toronto was getting 2,500 people at Lynx games. Now they sell out just about every game at BMO for Toronto FC. So that's the success stories we hear about. MLS pushed on, Toronto, Orlando, Seattle went from the USL team getting about 5,000 or 6,000, which was good in USL in those days, to this situation where they're getting 40,000 a game. But there are flip sides. Rochester was averaging 14,000 fans in 2001 in USL. Because of MLS having to put the brakes on growth, Rochester never made it to MLS. And subsequently, the club has collapsed to the point where USL, the league itself, has to take ownership of the team. This season, they finally now found an owner. They're averaging 4,000 or 5,000 fans a game. DC and Chicago, I mentioned. So there have been there were places where soccer was surging in 2001, in spite of the greater landscape, where the brakes were put on. And I would use those two examples: Chicago, Chicago, DC, and Rochester. Unfortunately, I guess those markets have to sacrifice for the greater good because, you know, if Kansas City was averaging 7,000 fans again, now they sell out every game. So it's been positive, but it hasn't been all positive for everybody, I should say.
True. I think we can all agree to that. Obviously, I think at the moment, Chicago hiring Panovic, I would have to believe at this moment, is a positive step going forward. What he did with the Serbian under 20 national team and got the under 20 World Cup.
I think that organization is beyond coaching. They're beyond that organization is rotting from inside out. Anytime they have a good homegrown player like a Schiff, a Harry Schiff, they sell them off, and there's no fan support. They've lost their fans. And Robert, you could speak to this better than I can, but I get the sense it's similar in DC. And there's so many personnel changes in that organization. It's hard to see them competing in an MLS these days where they're better-funded teams and better-staffed teams and teams that have much deeper support.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a team that's placing all its hopes on a new stadium, which will be coming in, you know, best-case scenario, 2 years, and it's been building up to that and is shuffling all the money towards building an adequate stadium. I mean, this is a team that's, you know, cutting its youth teams, it's cutting its infrastructure, it's cutting its support staff, and cutting everywhere it can, including on the field, just to get this stadium built. And what was the phrase that was used to? It looked like a prison, I believe. One DC public official said about the first rendering, and that's the result of all this cutting. So, DC, to speak to a parochial or a local team, it's. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't recovered from the glory days. It hasn't adjusted to the new MLS. And, part of that I blame on the league itself because it did kind of sit there and either take DC for granted or focus more on the shiny, bright objects and just let DC rot without doing as much for it. I wish they would have spent $1 million on lobbyists to get the stadium built like they did certain other teams. But, I think that's also positive for the league where a team like DC United is kind of antiquated at this point because, they're playing in an old style and these newer teams, newer stadia and such like that, are outclassing them. So it's interesting. It's still a league of have and have-nots in a lot of ways. There's going to be more haves, but every time it seems like it's evening out a little bit also, you get more new franchises coming in. You know, when David Beckham's Miami franchise finally gets off the ground in 2094, whenever it is, whenever the stadium gets built, do we have any doubts they're going to get preferential treatment? I don't know. I have no doubts about that. But yeah, it's interesting. There's still a lot of, disparity in the league, even though they've done a lot to keep themselves propped up. But I will say this. This is to touch on Daniel's point real quick Daniel, the point you were making. You know, I tell my daughter, we go to a decent number of DC United games now. I'm a paying customer, a Screaming Eagles member. She is as well and loves it. And we go to a few games a year. And I tell her every time we go to be thankful that we're able to see professional soccer, to go to a professional soccer game. I mean, Bobby Boswell ain't exactly Lionel Messi, but it beats the alternative of living in, places that don't have this opportunity. So I gripe a lot. I've griped a lot in the past, but, I am lucky and very thankful we do have professional soccer in the city.
Absolutely, and I think that's the number one thing here. I mean, listen, that's normal for everyone, griping about what your team is doing, what they're not doing. Whether it's a positive or a negative, we're all hoping to see this game growing and being healthy, not just, what's going on on the field, but financially as well. And I mean, Kardik can attest to this when he was running the NESL at the time. And Kardik, that was the hope that the NESL becomes bigger and better and grows along with MLS and USL. But at the same time, you wonder what could happen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you do do worry about the NASL. I think NASL has got some very good owners now, and that's a positive. And again, you know, there's a lot of disparagement going on of MLS and within NASL, and a lot of disparagement of USL. I write about this in this new ebook I published, The Soccer Wars. But I have to say, these NASL owners, they are in a position where they're able to recoup dollars on their investment. They're able to not just take a bath like previous owners of lower division teams did in this country because of the success of Major League Soccer kind of being a lifting tide to a rising tide that lifts all boats. That having been said, I mean, there's a lot in the critiques that NASL makes of MLS that I share. However, what has happened, unfortunately, and, you know, you deal with this, and it's not just Ted and the pro-rel crowd, but it's some, you know, people who aren't necessarily pro-rel, but they're anti-single entity NASL fans that have kind of exaggerated and skewed everything that goes on at the club level in this country to make it appear like everything that happens is some sort of conspiracy created by Soccer United Marketing or MLS. So I think that there's a lot of divisions now in our soccer community, and a lot of people in silos. A lot of people I know that just watch NASL. They don't watch MLS. They don't watch USL. A lot of MLS fans who don't watch the other leagues or aren't aware of the other leagues. Although I think the MLS fans are getting a little more mature about that. USL people who won't watch NASL. And it's one thing if you're not supporting the other products, which I think is bad enough because you need to be supporting soccer and supporting local soccer. And when I'm talking about supporting local soccer, go to your local games, whether they're NTSL games or PDL games or adult league, or, you know, up to the Orlando City, Seattle Sounders level where you're getting 40,000 fans at a game, you know, up through like USL and NASL, et cetera. And supporting local soccer means supporting club soccer in your country, in your nation. Whether you support the U.S. national team or not, that's your business, but you should be supporting the club game in this country. And there are a lot of people who support the club game, but they only support one of the leagues, right? And they hold grudges against the other. And then they make wild assumptions about the other leagues, like NASL fans saying, yeah, well, you know, USL is just a reserve league. The level of play is really low. Or USL fans saying, well, NASL just has a bunch of, you know, it's the Cosmos and a bunch of washed-up players. And it's something that, I have to say, when we talk about this 2001 and Ryan's article, guys, the one thing I miss about that, we've kicked on and the league was saved. The one thing I miss about that time is we were all kind of united as a soccer community then. We were all united in purpose. Yeah, there were little, you know, D.C. United fans versus New York Metro Stars fans, you know, these little, you know, kind of food fights. But they were essentially that, food fights. We were all united. We all knew that we needed to pull together in the same direction to make this sport successful in this country, and that goes right down through the USL. At the time, USL had the second and third division. There was no NASL in those days. Right through the USL level, right through the amateur level, college soccer. Now we're living in silos and fighting with one another because the game has become big enough that all these leagues are on television, and you know, you can turn on on a Saturday, 7:45, with the Premier League on NBC, and watch all the way through till the end of the day with MLS Live or NASL now on BN and CBS Sports Network. You can watch soccer all day. So we've kind of begun to segregate ourselves. So that's something I hate to say that I miss about 2000 and 2001 and 2002, guys. We didn't have these fights going on. We all were together, and I've seen friends turn on each other and, you know, just these horrible disputes over stupid ideological points, honestly.
Kardec, I disagree about your food fight between the Metro Stars and DC United. It was downright vile. I've seen my share.
What if this was?
I've seen my share at Giant Stadium invaded by screaming Eagles coming into our section when DC would come up the turnpike to take us on. I have seen more than just food fights. Let's just be honest with ourselves here, Robert. It's just been absolutely vile. But anyway, but I have to agree with you, Kardec, is that there's been more division in our country than now. I don't know what happened back in the days with the ASL1, ASL2, and whatever other leagues were going around back then. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, Robert, I know you've seen your share. I know Earl's seen his share. I've seen my share. I've been attacked, strangely enough, as well, about certain things that, you know, it's just I've done nothing wrong. All I've ever done was try to be a uniter if I can. And, you know, I have my own opinions, just like everyone else does, and you guys have as well. And you guys know you're free to speak your opinions on here because, you know, if we're going to, you know, clamp down on these discussions that we can't have freely, then, you know, the problem is that, you know, you won't have the ability to speak your mind, and then everything turns into a pile of crap. I mean, do you agree with that, Robert?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. MLS in the soccer, U.S. soccer world is kind of odd, because I was thinking back on other sports, and, you know, you think about baseball. What's the big baseball debate? Well, it's about players. You know, are the players too flashy these days, you know, whatever. The NFL, is it about safety? I'm watching, you know, the hockey playoffs right now. But it's never about the league itself. It's never like anti-league and pro-league, and that's what makes, you know, the U.S. soccer and MLS kind of different. Is, you know, you have these different factions for and against the league rather than, you know, a style of play or something like that. And it's absurd. You're absolutely right. I think all of us have been, you know, even, you know, the smaller fish in the pond like me, people have gone after for writing stuff that's, you know, just an honest comment or something like that, you know. And people take umbrage at the smallest things because there's these battle lines being drawn. And it's, you know, it's multiple factions going after each other, and it's absurd. I mean, do I agree with people who sit there and say, you know, MLS is just as good as the Premier League? No, that's the stupidest thing you could probably ever say. It's not as good. It's not as high quality. But you know what? If you enjoy it more, that's fine. But, you know, you say these things and people will attack you and you know, call you one thing or another. And it's silly. It's absolutely silly how this leagues go after each other. And you know, it's I prefer the rivalries between teams. You know, you're right, Daniel. I think I've told you this story. I don't take my daughter to Red Bulls, DC United games anymore. It's just a little too non-family friendly sometimes where we sit. I don't want her to learn those new words. But you know, it's more fun. I think what we're missing out on is developing some rivalries within the sport itself. You know, why can't the Cosmos compete against New York City FC and the Red Bulls? As almost a, you know, what do they call it, the Philadelphia college, you know, the Big Five or whatever. Why can't you have a three-way rivalry there, even though you're in two different leagues, you know?
Like Pennsylvania and Temple and Villanova.
LaSalle and St. Joe's and Temple and Villanova and Penn. I agree, Robert. I mean, Tampa Bay not playing Orlando here, because they've been in separate leagues. They played some friendlies, and they played in U.S. Open Cup 1 year. That's been a big deal. I mean, even in Orlando, the parking lot, you know, we're talking about Fafa Picault yesterday, who's a former Fort Lauderdale striker and Tampa Bay Rowdy player, who's now scoring goals for FC San Paulo. He's gained the notice of Jurgen Klinsmann. He even tweeted something today, you know, American player. He's from here in Miami, Haitian-American player. And Orlando fans are like, yeah, he played for your team, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, and that ugly green team. So, you know, there is these real rivalries that exist between teams that are close to each other in different leagues. But you're right, Robert. They can never play each other except in Open Cup. And that stinks.
Yeah. And I think that also brings up another point is, you know, the U.S. Open Cup should be a bigger deal. And I think that's one thing maybe all fans should focus on is, can we make the U.S. Open Cup a bigger tournament, a bigger deal? Because that's where you get these teams playing each other. That's where you bring in the history of U.S. soccer. I mean, you know, you bring in some of these – you know, traditional, you know, these teams have been around longer than, you know, MLS has been around, or, you know, have a history or connected with teams that have been around a long time. And so you bring a lot of soccer history, soccer rivalries, and you can bring out the true passion of soccer, I think, through the U.S. Open Cup. And instead it kind of gets shuffled to, you know, the back burner by the leagues and by some of these petty fights. So I think if we put some of these things aside, we can make soccer a lot better just by simple things like making the U.S. Open Cup more interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think if that ever does come to fruition, it would be a lot bigger, a lot better. I mean, I would love to see our national networks actually using this platform of the Open Cup, not just for the final. I mean, you know, we got to bring back at least maybe two quarterfinal matches, both semis, a round of 16, something. I mean, I don't mind the streams coming in, you know, on YouTube. I think that's a great thing to do currently if you want to do the earlier rounds. But the truth of the matter is I would love to see these other rounds getting national TV coverage, or at least, you know, why is it all the time you see Fox Sports 1 back at the time when it was Fox Soccer Channel? They always show the early rounds of the FA Cup, and then, you know, when you get to the big boys, you know, in the third or fourth rounds, I mean, they're already ready to go. And, you know, I just think that right now we got a situation where, you know, there's more room for improvement. And whether it goes as slow as a snail or fast as a rabbit, you know, see what happens. But the truth of the matter is, you know, guys, we do have to say, and I want to talk about Lamar Hunt for a minute here, but just to finish that off, we got to find a way, or someone needs to find a way to really, really push it forward into maybe better promotion. I think U.S. Soccer, the Open Cup Committee, has done a very good job advancing the Open Cup in a certain way, but still more needs to happen. But let me just say this about Lamar Hunt, and I really think that, and, you know, we'll go with Kardik first and then Robert. Lamar Hunt has shown, in my eyes, not just what Robert Kraft has done. He needs to be commended for keeping the Revolution alive, as well as his part in keeping the league alive. Phil Anschutz, who basically took the majority of the clubs on his back financially to keep them alive and selling them off to people who are now a part of this league. But, you know, I'd like to think Lamar Hunt is the brains of the outfit here. Lamar Hunt, who was involved in the original NASL with the old Dallas Tornadoes, you know, this man truly loves the sport. And while it's a shame that he's no longer around, obviously, because he's done a lot of great things. I mean, he's the only owner, that sports owner that I know, who has been inducted in two separate sports Hall of Fames in this country, the National Football Hall of Fame and the National Soccer Hall of Fame, as an owner.
I believe,
and
he might be in the tennis Hall of Fame also, Daniel.
Then he's outdone everybody. But, you know, Lamar Hunt shows real heart and real passion for this game, and it's just wonderful to be positive about this man that truly put his money where his mouth is, as well as his heart for the American game. Robert, you first, and then Kardik.
No, I think that's right. And, you know, I think the big thing about the biggest compliment I can pay is the fact that not only did, you know, again, as a businessman, he was a very good businessman. You know, he helped bring about the behemoth that is the money-making behemoth that is the NFL, which is saying something. But, you know, it helped keep soccer alive, professional soccer alive in the U.S. And while it's starting to bring small benefits now, I think it's going to bring a lot of benefits in the long run. So I give him a lot of credit for thinking outside of, you know, just his own interest in trying to keep this thing alive. You know, he could have gone a number of different ways in 2001. He could have, you know, started his own league. He could have, you know, just cut ship and bought in England or something like that if he wanted to make money. But, you know, he decided to push this league forward and keep it together and keep it solvent. And I think that's the biggest compliment I give him, is he thought outside of himself and he thought about this league and what the good it could do. And, you know, he went forward and put some capital on the line for that. And so I appreciate that.
Kardik?
Yeah, I completely agree with Robert. Not much more to add there. I would say that he really did something very wonderful, and I think we all owe him a debt of gratitude, because the will was no longer there. He wanted to throw people wanted to throw in the towel. He took on some additional teams, and I give a lot of credit also to Anschutz. San Jose is a good example. San Jose was a team that actually was. That had trouble initially, was league owned. Kraft took that on. He moved some personnel from New England over, and then he could no longer sustain that. And Anschutz took that club on and stopped it from folding. I'm disappointed by what happened with our Florida clubs. But you know what? It's working out in the sense that NASL has come into the two markets, which MLS abandoned in the state of Florida. Now MLS, NASL has doubled down, and I have some thoughts. Maybe we'll discuss this a little more in the next segment. But some thoughts on that.
Sure.
About two teams in Florida. But, you know, second division soccer has come into those markets that MLS abandoned and done quite well. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers and Tampa Bay Rowdies have done very well. So I think that that's been a positive. Soccer wasn't lost in those markets. It was lost for a period of time, and it was very difficult. As someone who sat in South Florida, I can tell you it was very difficult to not have – I mean, Miami FC came back and played in Dade County, but we didn't have a team at Lockhart Stadium where the Fusion plays, where I'm from, Fort Lauderdale. We didn't have a team between 2001. They folded after the season, after the playoffs. Obviously, they won the Supporters' Shield that year and still folded. 2002 through 2008, we didn't have a team playing here. And then USL team in 2009 and NASL team since 2010. It was very difficult. There was a lot of bitterness. There was the possibility of losing my connection to the pro soccer game because we didn't have a team anywhere in the state of Florida. Orlando is a new team in MLS the last few seasons, so we didn't have a team in the state of Florida for over a decade. I know we persevered, and it's been good that second division's come back to those places. But I do have to say that, since we're talking about this subject, Daniel, and I'll end on this note, there are a lot of fans in the state of Florida. Now they're beginning to come back, and they're becoming Orlando City fans, but a lot of fans who were displaced by the folding of the Fusion and the Mutiny, that we lost to pro soccer. So wish they could have kept those two teams alive while they – now that we know how close the league was overall, the folding, I think my attitude toward – the folding of Tampa Bay and Fort Lauderdale has Miami-Fort Lauderdale Fusion has changed in the last week since Ryan's article.
Absolutely, and I just want to say this, guys. And you know, I have been on record about the whole pro rel situation. I have been on record saying, would I like to see it happen in American soccer? Yes, I would. I would love to see it happen. If it can be implemented. Look, I'm not going to stand in the way if it does happen. I'm not going to stand in the way if it doesn't happen. But the truth of the matter is this, guys, and you can go ahead and give your own thoughts as well. This article for me by Ryan Rosenblatt, and once again, Ryan's done a great job writing this article, getting the information from Dan Hunt, one of Lamar's two sons running FC Dallas, and of course, as we know, the Precourt family is running the Crew. There's another owner group that's running Sporting Kansas City, formerly the Kansas City Wizards. You know, I will say this right now, and whether I get flack for it, fine, because I am a big boy and I can take it. While I do say that if it does happen, I'm not going to stand away, pro rel at this moment is not the biggest thing that Major League Soccer or soccer needs. There is more that needs to happen before we bring in promotion and relegation into this country. We need to see more of everything. I think the financial end so far, it's a great start. That needs to survive more through these television national contracts. I mean, look at what ESPN has done. ESPN has been there from the start, from the very start. And they need to be commended for sticking with Major League Soccer the way that they have. I mean, Fox Sports has been in and out. They're back in. NBC came in at a time for 3 years. I hope that NBC does come back and does take on an MLS game of the week if they can. I think it's great to see Univision people being fully on board with MLS now before back in the day when it was Andres Cantor, and of course, they didn't take the league that seriously back in the day, but, you know, you got to give them a lot of credit. But once again, pro rel is not the main issue right now because the NASL needs – I like to think the NASL needs to have more teams than just the 12 that they have currently. They need more before you can really start throwing that idea around, and at the same time – there are more things
the NASL,
that
the NASL needs to have 12 teams that are stable. They've done better with this. Daniel, but it's important to note that some of the NASL teams are not doing that well. Some teams are doing excellent, but look, Indy needs a stadium. They don't get a stadium, all bets are off on how long they can last. Jacksonville needs some sort of stadium or venue solution, and they're working with the Chamber, they're working with Mayor Lenny Curry, but this is something people are confused by. Because a team draws well, I saw the Milwaukee Rampage draw well for years in the USL and go out of business. I mean, I've seen Richmond draw well for years and have to drop a division. You know, I saw Charleston draw well, although Charleston owns their own – that's a bad example because they own their own revenue. We saw, you know, Long Island Rough Riders, Western Mass. These teams all draw well and drop divisions or fold. So the Cincinnati Kings. So now we have another team in Cincinnati that's doing well. You have to control your own revenue. You have to have stable sources of income. You have to have long-term sponsorships. Right now, a lot of NASL teams are struggling with that. There are some that are doing very well, but there are others that aren't. So I don't think 12 teams is too small. I think NASL needs 12 stable teams. Then we can start talking pro rel. Right now, they don't have 12 stable teams. They have the NASL has I can't even tell you how many stable teams they have offhand. I think Carolina's going to stabilize now with Steve Malik, so that's one.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a handful of stable teams. Ottawa's a stable team. They have their own venue. They have great ownership. They're like three or four stable teams in the NASL, if I'm being perfectly honest with you.
Absolutely. I agree with you there. Your opinion, Robert, I mean, that's the thing right there. Financial stability, not just in Major League Soccer, but from all levels of American soccer in all leagues, professional as well as amateur, that are under the U.S. soccer umbrella. Robert?
Yeah, and I'm going to put on my day job hat here for a minute, and I'd ask this question of U.S. soccer. What's the mission of U.S. soccer? Because if the mission is to grow the game in the country, in this country, then you've got an issue where is the saturation of soccer in the U.S. working? And probably no, when you have this competition, and again, as Kardec outlines in his book, with NASL sometimes poking MLS in the eye and putting an NASL franchise in an MLS city and things like that. You know, if the goal is to grow the sport in this country, then what U.S. soccer needs to do is get all the leagues together and spread out as much as possible, you know, this product. And then you can sit there and say, well, promotion and relegation should come in because we want, you know, Indianapolis to experience top flight soccer and they need to earn it. And things like that. If it's to feed the U.S. men's national team, if it's to win a World Cup, then the current system might work pretty well because you've got a competition between leagues to put out the best product, and you're also competing overseas. So I think the bigger issue is U.S. soccer doesn't really know what it wants to do and what it wants to be, and you see that right now with some of the decisions that the leagues are making, with the confusion, with players, the player situations, a lot of U.S. players coming back to MLS and not growing. You know, I think a lot of it is U.S. soccer doesn't really have a goal in mind for what it wants to be. It may say it does, but I think it's kind of nebulous, and I think that's the more important issue than promotion relegation.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, listen, thank you very much for joining me tonight. Clark's going to remain for a little bit longer for NASL discussion, but Robert, thank you very much for your time. I always appreciate it. I'll talk to you next time, and thank you for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, guys.
All right, Robert Hay, of course, DC United guy, and you gotta show some respect to Robert, even though he is a DC fan.
Yeah, Robert's one of the smartest minds in American soccer. So it makes me think DC is the team to kind of hitch your wagon to if Robert supports them.
Absolutely. But let's move on with the NASL here as we're going to talk about what's been going on here. I'm very encouraged, Kardec. Miami FC at the it's the FIU Stadium, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, 10,000 plus. 10,000 plus in their opening match last week against the Tampa Bay Rowdies. They have two draws against two Florida teams, and I do believe they took on Jacksonville, and that's their first loss of the season. But still, though, when you have over 10,000 fans in downtown Miami, or at least in the area in Miami, to see that happen, here's the question. is David Beckham's, attempts, are they in trouble now? Because it looks like Miami FC has gotten off to a fantastic start. I mean, over 10,000. I mean, some would probably predict 1,000. No, they got over 10,000 fans for their opening home opener.
Yeah. In the interest of full disclosure, let me just let our listeners know, they may not be aware of this, I'm back in the Fort Lauderdale Strikers organization as a consultant, so I continue to do my normal media work. It's just additional work for me. I haven't had to give up any of the media work I do. It's why you still hear me commentating. It's why you still have me at Orlando games covering Orlando City. I'll actually be the commentator for Orlando's game this week, Orlando B, their B team in USL, their game against Pittsburgh. So I'm still doing my media work, but I do want to preface things and say that I am a consultant to the Fort Lauderdale Strikers organization.
Right.
We played Miami FC in the first game, and we didn't draw very well,
no.
Quite frank. And one of the worst attendances we've had since the team returned in 2011 in any game. Obviously, worst season opener. Our lowest season opener previously had been about 4,700. This was about 2,300. And in the last year, we had opened with 12,000 against the Cosmos. You know, generally, we've been at 6,000 or 7,000. That's been our average about for opening day. And we opened against them. They got 10,000 at their opening game. So I think what you have is two teams in the same area competing for fans. Teams don't play very far from one another. And they're the new team. They made some very good signings. They have some very good players. And people are curious, and they've done a good job of marketing that and getting some of the fans who supported us to go to their games. So I'm going to say this from Strikers' perspective. We'll get back to my Kardik, Chris Schneier as a media, as World Soccer Talk, and all the other media outlets I work for in a minute. But I'll say this from a Strikers' perspective. It's our job to win some of those fans back. I'm happy for Miami that they got 10,000 in their game. I wish they could continue to get 10,000 and we get 10,000 also. That might not be possible. There might be a pool of about 14,000 to 15,000 fans down here that will go to non-MLS pro soccer games. Maybe we have as many fans for MLS as Orlando does. I don't think we do, but maybe we do. Maybe we're going to get 30 or 35,000 a game like Orlando does. Orlando, I think, averaged 33,000 a game last year. They're averaging about 40 a game this year. I don't think we quite have that many in South Florida, so we're competing with them for a lot of these fans. My job the job of the people I work with at the Strikers organization is to win some of those fans back to us, or those fans continue to go to Miami games when they're at home. They're at home on Friday. Go to their game, come see our game on Saturday against Jacksonville. So, but they did open well. They got a lot of fans, and they were a good team. They were unlucky in that game against Tampa Bay. And I thought they played fairly well in Jacksonville on Friday night against the team in the Armada that I think is, if I have to say they're a top four in NASL right now, I'd say it's the Cosmos, Carolina, Jacksonville, and Minnesota. I have very high hopes for Jacksonville as the season goes on with Tony Meola and Jimmy Rooney there. I will admit, you have relationships in this sport. They're people you know. I know Jimmy Rooney really well. I know Tony Meola fairly well. I like what they're doing. I like the players they've signed. I have a very, very – Kayvon George being the latest. Brian Burke's been very good for them, and Richie Ryan's been very good for them. I have very high hopes for Jacksonville. So I was impressed to see Miami hang with them for as long as they did in that game on Friday night. So good start for Miami.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'd love to see more action here in the NASL and Jacksonville. Congratulations to Tony Meola getting his first victory as head coach of the Jacksonville Armada and first year as a head coach in his career starting off here, coming from the TV side. But who would have thought?
Why do you think that he didn't get a job until now? That's one of the things that I wonder about.
I think he wasn't – he felt he wasn't ready yet. He was, you know –
Tell you what, he's running out because he's got – I like what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Tony is just, you know, when you got a guy from Kearney, New Jersey, and they're going to go out
the
there.
The whole Kearney contingent's coaching now because Tab's coaching the U-20s, yep. And John Harks is coaching Cincinnati.
Yep.
I know you're going to want to talk about them later in the show, the big game they had against Louisville this week. Got over 20,000.
Great game. That was a great game, obviously.
Yeah.
And, I mean, over 20,000, that's a great record in the USL. And, of course, I think we know this as well. That's a rivalry right there along one of the great
ever.
Cincinnati, Ohio versus Kentucky. That will never, ever die in basketball, even in soccer. Look what's going on. It's just unbelievable what's going on in that part.
Yeah, I mean, Louisville to Cincinnati is about an hour and a half on the highway. I mean, it's even closer than I am to Orlando. I mean, I go for all the Orlando games. So it's really close.
Yeah.
I know someone, one of these guys who's an American who only follows European stuff. You know, one of those is like, well, how can you call it a derby? The teams are over an hour apart. I'm like, that in this country, that's close.
That's right.
You know, we've been calling this Fort Lauderdale Strikers Tampa Bay game, and you can even go on Wikipedia and look up the Florida Derby, and that will be what comes up. And it's 3.5 hours from Fort Lauderdale to Tampa. San Jose and Los Angeles, earthquakes and the galaxy. You know, even the Cosmos to the Red Bulls, it's less mileage. But, you know, if you were to call that a derby because you have to cross the river, you have to go from Long Island all the way to Harrison. I mean, that's going to take us so much time. So we don't have those same sort of derbies that they have in England and in Spain and Italy and Germany in this country. But we have this was a good one. But anyway, getting back to the NASL, I feel like I really feel like Tony Meola was one of these guys that waited a long time to be a coach. And I would say the same for Steve Pritchett in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
In the USL. These two guys are both former national team players, did their time, worked through the system, maybe were blackballed for some reason. I don't know if that's the case with Trichu and with Miola, but it took them an awful long time to get a job. But once they got into the head coaching job, they've both done very well, done a good, very good job.
I don't think it's about blackballing. I just don't think they were comfortable enough to maybe make the move. That could be the issue. They were probably not comfortable enough to make that move. Besides, Tony was still doing, insurance before he even got back into it. He thought he was done. He thought he was done with soccer. He thought it was over with. Next thing you know, someone said to him,
Tony, when I talked to him, when he got the job, a day or two later, he told me that watching games as a commentator has really helped him. He learned more about coaching from doing that than from
Absolutely.
Just about anything else.
Absolutely.
So that's an interesting thing. I mean, we could ask guys like Shep Messing if that made – well, you know what? It made Pecky a really good – well, Pecky was a great captain, but it made Pecky – the couple of years he commentated on Metro Stars, Red Bull games, he I think it really helped him grow into that role as a coach. So, and then I would say the other big stories coming out of the first couple of weeks of NASL, Carolina continues to win. I think that there's a real feel-good atmosphere around that club and the new ownership and the job Colin Clark's doing. There's a little bit of concern about their attendance. It continues to be low based on what the team had wanted. So they're going to have some improvement.
Let's be honest, their car. I mean, after all the years they had, you know, ownership, and at the same time, were they going to leave? You know, was the team going to fold? You know, I mean, let's give some doubt, not doubt, but give some credit to some of the fans that I think they will come back, and I think they are going to come back. I want to see what Matt's going to do. It's been a great – I agree it has been a great start. But the truth of the matter is this. There are going to be times where fans are not going to come back quick enough. Why? Because shot ownership, and hopefully Malik will be the one to bring all that back, and everyone in the triangle will be, you know, going back and filling up Med Soccer Park.
Yeah,
there's
a lot of competition within the soccer community there. I mean, not right now, but once they get to August, college soccer is very popular. You've got some of the best programs, both men's and women's, in the country there. I've always felt like maybe NWSL should look at Carolina for a potential expansion franchise. So that's all very there's a lot of good soccer infrastructure there, but certainly they'd like to see an improvement in their attendance. Tampa Bay beat Edmonton 1-0. Matty Pickens with a save at the death of a penalty kick. Something Joe Bendick couldn't do yesterday in Orlando. you know, the farcical penalty kick.
Yes.
But, of course, again, I mean, I apologized earlier that I didn't realize Molina would hand the ball. These things happen when you're in a press box and you're just going bang, bang, and, you know, you think it's a spectacular goal.
That wasn't
the
hand.
I should have realized Molino's first touch isn't that good to have controlled that ball that well and scored the way he did. But I didn't think that way, nor did any of my colleagues around me. We all thought, that is spectacular. What a way to win a game. And it turned out he had handled the ball. I mean, of course his first touch is going to be great if you aid yourself with your hand. But we didn't think that way. So, but back to down I-4 about 70 miles. Tampa Bay wins 1-0. They are not a very good team at this point. Stuart Campbell's made some nice signings the last couple of weeks. Let's see if they improve. They play Carolina this week at Al Lang. I would expect Carolina to win that game. Jacksonville's playing Fort Lauderdale. I will withhold a prediction from that game because of my role with the Strikers. Although I think based on what I've said about Jacksonville, people can probably figure out what I think of that team.
But how about that victory? How about that victory by Indy 11 at the death? Amon Zayed, with not only converting a penalty in second half stoppage time to equalize, but punching home the match winner and beating New York Cosmos. How about that? I mean, I'm not saying...
So, Daniel, do you remember when I was on your preseason show, who did I tell you was going to be the big player to look out for that had signed in the league?
Zayed.
Yeah. And, yeah, I will admit he hadn't really done much in the first two games to repay that faith I had in him, but he came through. What a spectacular winner that was. In the dying moment. Incidentally, Indy has never lost to the New York Cosmos. Very, very rare. Seven games, they haven't lost to them yet. Whereas there are a bunch of NASL teams that have not beaten the Cosmos. So, Indy, even though they've struggled in this league to get results, that's one thing that they have that they've been able to accomplish that no one else has been able to, is this kind of hex for whatever reason they have on the Cosmos.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a look at this week. We forgot about Rio and Miami. As I said, that game's Friday night. I think that those are two talented teams. I don't think either team is really I don't think Rio has put it together yet. I think Miami, I was impressed by them against Jacksonville. As I've said over and over again, I'm kind of a Jacksonville fan as far as the way Tony not like a fan of the team as a fan, but a fan of what Tony Meola has done to put this side together in the way he has. So I think Miami probably wins this game. Oklahoma City's going to need to get some results in. So it's an interesting start to the season. I have to say there's been almost too much soccer going on between this and all the MLS games we've talked about and USL. I'd have to watch the Orlando B team this season, cover them. They're a very, very bad team. I have to say they're one of the worst. There's some reserve teams that are good, like the Red Bulls 2 team and the Galaxy, Los Dos, and then there are other reserve teams that I think are full of players that are trying to make an impression for the senior team. And I think Orlando fits into that category. So I don't know. I think Phil and the organization in Orlando really wanted to win this season with the B team. They just got to accept that it's a growing situation, like Seattle, like Bethlehem. That they're going to have to take what they can get and use it for player development for the A team. That's something, and maybe this is a conversation we have on another show, Daniel. We're going to have to look at Orlando as an organization that is a team that does not that has to kind of gain some perspective on wins and losses. They fired people in their front office because they didn't make the MLS playoffs in their first season, which they finished. If you look at MLS as a single table, they finished 14th out of 20 teams. That's pretty good for a team that's an expansion team.
Yeah,
compete for a title. They wanted to compete for a title in USL. I think that was very unrealistic with a B team in a first year without an established youth program, or they have an established youth program, but without really kind of this vertical pyramid the way the LA Galaxy has it. So I think there were a lot of issues as to why they're not progressing. But that's for another show, another time.
Absolutely. Karik, thank you very much for joining me and sticking around a little later, talking some NASL as well as some other USL stuff going on. And I'll talk to you again soon. And I will see you in Orlando in 2 weeks. I can't wait.
Yes. And yeah, Orlando and Red Bulls have two games in 3 weeks against one another. So looking forward
That's
to seeing
right.
you down here.
Yep.
And it'll be some good games. The Red Bulls need to get some wins. So maybe they'll start this week.
We will see. Thanks, Karik. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Karik Krishnire, formerly of in the NASL as their communications manager, is with World Soccer Talk and many other fun things involving soccer down in South Florida and Central Florida. Let's just finish up here with this standings, of course. Currently, Carolina RailHawks, they're a perfect 3-0, and they have 9 points. Minnesota United in second place. Cosmos in third place with 6 points, both at the moment scoring 6, allowing 2 for a plus 4 on the differential, and they have the same record. In the 11, with that victory over the Cosmos, they vault up to fourth place with 5 points. In fifth place, of course, Tampa Bay Rowdies also with 5 points, but they have scored one less than Indy. In sixth place, Jacksonville Armada with 3 points. Seventh place, Miami FC with 2. From 8 to last, Rio OKC, minus 1 on the differential. Fort Lauderdale Strikers with a point, minus 3 on the differential. FC Edmonton also with minus 3. They have not scored a goal yet in 3 games, so that's why they are in 10th place. Ottawa Fury, 3 matches in, a draw, 2 losses, 1-4-5 against, with a minus 4 differential and 1 point to basically end it all for them. Let's go to the schedule now for the next bunch of matches that will be happening in the NASL. And let's also not forget the television times as well for these games. Friday, April 22nd, Miami FC hosting Oklahoma City. You can catch that online on ESPN3. Saturday, April 23rd. Fort Lauderdale hosting Jacksonville this time at Lockhart Stadium. That can be seen live on ESPN3 digital platform. On beIN Sports, the Tampa Bay Rowdies will host the undefeated and league-leading in the spring season Carolina RailHawks at Al Lang Stadium. And that will be on beIN Sports, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. On April 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Minnesota United host the New York Cosmos. That will be seen on One World Sports. And then on Sunday, April the 24th, the Battle of Canada will happen. FC Edmonton hosting Ottawa Fury. 4 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Mountain, and that will be also on the digital platform of ESPN3. And don't forget, in the fall season, CBS Sports Network will begin their coverage of the North American Soccer League in the fall season. So that's going to be exciting. That's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait for that when it happens, and it should be a lot of fun. And now we can talk about the Red Bulls here, Four Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Let's go and talk about a positive thing. And we're going to go to the USL team first. The 0-0 draw on Sunday afternoon against the Rochester Rhinos, the defending USL champions. That was a hell of a match. And I have to say that Rochester has always given the Red Bulls two side a tough time because Bob Lilly does a fantastic job of managing his roster, doing wonderful things there. And you just have to say that for the Rhinos, they look solid out there. Great defensively, great attacking, great everything. They did a wonderful job of facing a Red Bulls 2 side that is now more compact, much more attack-minded, solid defensively, and at the same time, you know, they've got some quality as well. Obviously, the question now is this. when will some of these players get the call up to play for the MLS team? Because let me say these names right now. Tim Schmall, center back. Derek Etienne Jr., midfielder, creative midfielder. We're talking about Brandon Allen. And you have already seen Alex Mule in that match for 90 full minutes against the Colorado Rapids. We'll get to that match in a minute. You're seeing the future if you're watching the USL games on YouTube. Or let me just say this right now. I know it's not MLS, but if you want to see the future of this New York Red Bull side, go to the USL games. Go to Red Bull Arena anyway. I know it's not going to be a lot of people, but you know what? It is worth the price of admission to go over and check it out, because you're not going to be disappointed. In this matchup, a scoreless draw, a lot of action, a lot of quality chances being taken, some spectacular saves. Sadly, Ryan Mera pulled his groin, bit of tightness in his groin when he went off his line around the 8th, 9th minute to play that ball and clear it down the field. And then all of a sudden, it just happened, and it's terrible because we all know how bad Ryan Mera wants to get back in there and get back onto the field for an MLS match. But once again, you have to say, for this Red Bulls 2 team, a lot of great things happened. Rafael Diaz came off the bench as the backup keeper. Ryan Mera subbed out, unfortunately, one of those rare moments. And Rafael Diaz did an excellent job. He faced 11 shots, 5 on goal, made 5 spectacular saves, stopped Steven Dos Santos at point blank at the doorstep by the far post. Tried a little back heel flick, made a great save there by Dos Santos. Gomez for Rochester played a solid match as well. He looked very good himself. Tomas Gomez made some stellar saves too. Rochester, 3 solid saves there. It's Rochester with 9 total shots, 5 of them on goal, saved by Rafael Diaz. Tomas Gomez, 3 big saves off the Red Bulls, 11 shots, 3 on frame, solid saves completely. And you know what? It wasn't that bad. It was really good. It was fantastic saves, fantastic action, a bit of a skirmish. Towards the start of second half stoppage time, apparently Mason Deeds was knocked down by Dos Santos. And, that looked like it was by accident. He didn't mean to do it, and I think there was a properly called for a foul. And then all of a sudden here comes Schmall, and one of the newer players signed here was Chike Mbaye, and he got shoved down. Not too hard, but then again, Dos Santos should know better than to shove down another player, and that's why he got the straight red, because of his actions shoving down Chike Mbaye right there. And you can hear Bob Lilly yelling at him, saying, "You're selfish there. You can't do that." And, you know, Bob Lilly, you don't want to be at the other end of that argument, because, you know, you probably have to duck when he screams. But still, great action, great stuff in this matchup. And here is the head coach of the Red Bulls 2 side. Of course, it's Woolly Magic, John Walenek.
Overall, you know, last year Rochester, they gave you a fight as well, and it ended 0-0 then last season. How do you feel your guys did today against, again, 0-0 today?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'd obviously like to come away with 3 points. You're playing the champions from last year, and, you know, I think we had the better of the game. So definitely some good things to get out of it. I just think we could have been a little better and had some opportunities to take 3 points at home against the team. They're tough to play against. Let's be honest. They're very well coached and very good tactically and very tight. They don't give away a lot. And we created a number of chances, but still 0-0. So it's a little bit of both.
Is there an update on Ryan? Because obviously he subbed him out. It looks like it was a groin issue.
Yeah, he's got some groin pull. When he came out, his first step felt it a little bit, and then it started to really tighten up on him. So no way to know how bad or whatever, but didn't make sense for him to stay in the game, especially that early in the game. So.
And how proud are you about Rafael Diaz? Because he stepped in fantastically and made some several solid saves.
Yeah, Rafi's here for a reason. You know, he's been in first team camp the last 2 years, and he's with us last year. Obviously, didn't get many games, but. He's a guy that I have a lot of faith in, so no problem.
What do you think this team needs to do to get over the hump to actually finally get a win against Rochester?
I think a lot of teams are asking that question. They only lost one game last year. They've lost one this year right away, but it's tough. It's a good test for our guys, for sure. I think, again, it's a credit to us that we had the better of the game and had the better of the chances, but, there's still that little bit left to kind of guys to learn and figure out and how to win tight games like that where only one or two actions in a game make the difference. And we're close to giving away one there a couple times, but we're definitely proud to keep another shutout. Credit to our guys. And then who's going to make a play? That's the question. And a couple guys are close, but didn't quite happen.
How do you feel about the play of the team you started checking by and
Check came on well. So it's always difficult coming on as a center back in the game, but I think he handled himself pretty well. And he's a good soccer player. He's able to play forward well, and he got on the run a couple of times. This is not always what we expect from a center back, but he could clearly had some energy and really wanted to play. It's been a long process for him. So I'm sure he's excited to get on the field and show what he can do. And I thought he stepped in well. Sampara, some of the same. I don't think he impacted the game as much as I hoped, but at the same time he was good and he connected, and they'd just like to be a little bit more dangerous. But that's not an easy team to be dangerous against. So
what is the luxury to have a tall center back like Schmall, because he pretty much did the destroyer moments. He stopped most of the attacking runs from Rochester whenever he had the opportunity.
Yeah, Tim's first 90 minutes, I thought he was solid and did well. And obviously, he wins a lot of aerial battles, and again, Rochester's that's one of their strengths. They have some of the tallest forwards in the league, and it's nice to have Tim to be able to counteract that. And he was pretty good on the ball, and we have a lot of good options at center back, so it's a tough competition for guys, and I think it's driving those guys to get better and to take advantage of the opportunities, and so far they've all done pretty well. You get 3 shutouts in a row, so.
If I can ask about the incident that happened in around second half stoppage time, you had a pretty good angle what happened with a terrible tackle, I guess, and then Dos Santos got frustrated or words changed.
Rochester is a tough physical team, and they battle, and sometimes when you battle that much, things boil over a little bit, and there's nothing too malicious out there, but at the same time I think the red covers is deserved, and just trying to protect my guys. A couple of things thrown. I don't know exactly what happened either. Sometimes you can't tell how much force was thrown into things and whether real contact was made, but I saw 2 moments where arms and hands were raised, and there's just no place for that. So referee did a good job.
Derek Hinton continues to look really good on the offensive side of the ball. Is he progressing to your standards at this point? I know you've in the past you've talked about wanting him to be a little more defensive minded on the ball.
It's not defensive minded, it's just, when we don't have the ball, we all defend. And Derek has to learn that. And for the most part, he's definitely improving in that area. Today wasn't his best. I think last week he was better. It's not an easy development path to just go in one direction up. So, you have spits and spurts, and sometimes you're better than you are 1 week, and then the next week, not so good. Derek kind of came to life in the second half a little bit, but think he forced things a little bit much, which is fine. In some respects, I think that's good because he's trying to take the game into his own hands. But sometimes when Derek does that, he forgets about, you know, the constant work that needs to go into things. So, you know, it certainly wasn't a step backwards or anything, but, you know, last week was one of his better games that he's played with. So, you know, we think the world of Derek, and, you know, it's just constantly being hard on him so he can continue to get better.
And that is head coach of Red Bulls 2, John Walenik, of course, Woolly Magic, performing magic with this roster so far. Still undefeated in USL action, 2 wins, 2 draws, no losses. They are absolutely doing very well. And, of course, in those 4 games, 8 goals for, 2 goals against. Still, though, Ryan Mara and Rafael Diaz, we're seeing the future, of course, with the Red Bulls 2 team. And hopefully Ryan Mara can get back up to MLS action today whenever Luis Robles calls it quits. Now let's go to my man of the match of this tilt, Rafael Diaz, a Rockaway, New Jersey native who stepped up big time and made some spectacular saves to perform very well.
So obviously Ryan gets hurt with the groin, and you stepped in there. And how do you think you did today, stepping in for Ryan?
I think it was a good performance. Team did well in front of me, so a lot of credit to them and defenders. So I just needed a couple touches to get myself into the game, and the rest was a lot of just organization and making sure the guys in front of me were in a good position.
How tough is Rochester? Obviously, they won the championship last year, but how tough are they? How compact are they?
Oh, they're a good team. You know, they know what they're doing. They're organized. They defend pretty well, and they're hard to break down, as we saw today. And that's something we knew, and unfortunately, we weren't able to put one in the net.
So how difficult is it to stay prepared, not knowing, you know, the backup keeper when you're going to come in like that?
Yeah, it's tough, but that's kind of the business, you know. So you always have to stay ready and train like you're going to play every game, and whenever you get an opportunity to play, you just have to step in and kind of, you know, get your chance and make the best of your opportunities.
So you definitely looked like you were seeing the ball really well, particularly in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
How are you staying sharp so much when last season obviously it seemed like you were third in line, now you're second in line? Mm-hmm. Is it are you getting particularly more minutes in training? How is that working for you?
No, it's very similar as last year. Just training with Vadim and just in training, just make sure that we train like I were to play and just getting a lot of reps and just trying to be better in training and for opportunities like this and see if I can, you know, produce if I get a chance.
So depending on what happens with Ryan, obviously it looks like he'll be there in the next match. How grueling do you think the season's going to be now that you're going to be in there and probably stopping balls against whoever you're facing next?
No, I'm just excited for the challenge, and you know, I'm going to go back and work and see things I have to do better, and then, you know, take it from there and prepare for the next game.
And Rafael Diaz, who stepped in there for Ryan Mara. And, of course, it did tighten up, but his groin. But still, great job by Rafael Diaz to step in there and to make big, big saves to keep it a 0-0 draw, a point for each side. The defending USL champions, Rochester Rhinos, always giving a game to the New York Red Bulls 2 team. And they will be ready for their next matchup this coming Friday night against the Wilmington Hammerheads down in Wilmington, North Carolina at Legion Stadium. Of course, you can watch that match on YouTube. So get ready for that one, and hopefully you'll enjoy that one. Now let's go back to the New York Red Bulls MLS team. First, give congratulations to Luis Robles. 113 consecutive games played, beats the record held by Kevin Hartman. Now he is the all-time games played consecutive matches leader for the MLS as well as for the New York Red Bulls. And, you know, this club has seen great keepers like Tony Miola, like Tim Howard, Johnny Walker, some other keepers that we have seen getting some opportunities here and there. But once again, it is a situation where you rarely see a keeper do this well for this long. And congratulations once again to Luis Robles for setting up that type of record. And hopefully he'll continue on, and we'll definitely see more from him as the season goes by. But, you know, once again, there is an issue. Once again, there is an issue with this club when it comes to trying to either hold on for a point or holding on or trying to at least get to a point or trying to earn three full points. And all I can say is that this is not funny anymore. You know, this is not funny anymore when you're seeing this team that made barely any changes except for bringing in Gideon Ba, and possibly trying to use the USL side to call up certain players to get opportunities. But you know what? You have to say this. When is this all going to end? When will this nightmare be finished? That's the big question right now. And all I can say is, I don't know when. I don't know when. You're hoping that this coming Sunday against Orlando City on Fox Sports 1, that's the match that will finally produce a positive result. That's the match you're all hoping. And all you can say is this. It's got to end sometime. It's got to end sometime and get back into the win column. And then you're going to have to build on it. Build on that win. Build on a win and then make it two. And then make it three. And then make it four. And then you make it five. Because right now, where the two teams in the Eastern Conference ended last year, the Red Bulls at one, the Columbus Crew at two, at the top of the East, are right now at the bottom of the East. And it's just not funny anymore. It's just not funny anymore to see all of these losses continue to pile up match in, match out, especially what happened on Saturday. Obviously, the first match for Jermaine Jones this year, but still, it's just been absolutely dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Are they doing well? Are they in the match? Of course they are. How much more do you have to say that? How many more times do you want me to say, well, they're going to play great. They're, you know, they're playing great. They're doing great. They are doing well in 9 out of 10 of the necessary offensive categories in the statistics. But the one part of that stats, the one part of those statistics that's not doing well, as always, is the scoreboard. And when the scoreboard is the loudest of the statistics that are out there, there, you know, that's a problem. Problem. And we need to see this team being in better positions to get quality shots on frame. Case in point, Ronald Zubar did the job early in the second half. After the corner was stopped and the ball brought back to Sasha Kleistian, Sasha with a fantastic cross, a fantastic cross. And Ronald Zubar is given an opportunity to win a free header, and he powered it in to beat Zach McMath for the equalizing goal. And you know what? That was pretty good. That was pretty darn good. And, you know, it's also tough when you don't have Bradley Wright Phillips putting the ball in the back of the net. I think Bradley is being too, let's just say, too much finesse by trying to be cheeky with his shots. He's trying to nail it off the inside of the posts, and he keeps missing the posts. I think right now, he just has to stop being so full of finesse. He's got to go out there and he's got to try. He's really, really got to try to power these shots home. And once he powers these shots home, I think it will be a lot better. I think he will convert more. And I really believe that he's going to do the job that we all know he can do. Believe me, I know this man. He is not happy with what's been going on the pitch. He is not happy that he's not converting these chances that he normally does the last couple of seasons. And I'm telling you right now, he's probably burning up inside. He's probably, thinking about ways how to be in a better position, how to take better chances, how to do this, how to do that. And you know what? It's time that for him, and I only say this because I respect the man. I really do respect this man. He does a great job converting his chances, but he's got to go out there and he's got to really be in a better position, maybe be a little bit more closer to the goal, in front of the goal. And he really needs to power home those opportunities that are either being wasted or it's going right at the keeper. Because right now, the keepers are either in great position, those saves on him. But going back to the match, it's just a moment where you have to say that this team right now is snake bit. If they would have left Dick's Sporting Goods Park with a point, that's a victory. That is a positive result right there. And all I can say is this. It just has to be a lot better. They know it. They don't need me to tell them this. They're aware of it. Jesse Marsh is aware of it. The coaching staff is aware of what has to happen, what needs to change. Because at this point in time, it's really, you know, it feels like it's doom and gloom, and hopefully it's not. Hopefully these guys can pull together and start a winning streak. Because right now, it's just getting difficult. It's just getting difficult. It's really, really tough. And all I can say is that they know it. They need to fix it. They need to be better at it. And hopefully, the positive results will start coming their way. But they're going to be home this coming Sunday night, taking on an Orlando City side that's going to be upset because they lost 2 points, and we'll see what happens. Here is a quote from Jesse Marsh about how frustrating the result was, and I'm reading the quote. "I'm having a hard time explaining what we're going through because it's another game where I feel like in many ways we established ourselves, especially in the second half, as the better team. We're on top of the game more, and somehow this game slips. So it's incredibly frustrating. I can't explain it. I've never been through situations like this, like these, where consistently we actually do okay, but can't reward ourselves enough for goals, and feels like almost every time the team comes on the field, we give away chances that wind up in the goal. Honestly, it's wild what we've been through. I've told the team that I'm gutted for them. That kind of effort and that kind of push that they showed in belief, that's our pathway to the success that we know we can get to. I will continue to say the same things, which is that I know we have a good team and this is going to turn. This is going to turn." And you know what? You got to say that eventually it's going to have to, but maybe Jesse might need to change it up a bit. I'm not saying to give up on the press offense, but at least maybe change up the formation. Maybe go out there and pull out a 4-4-2 to start the match. Maybe do a 4-3-3. Try and switch it up a little bit if it's possible. You know, it's going to be one of those moments where you just have to say that these things need to turn around pretty much. And they have to turn around. And if it's the match against Orlando City, then let's see what happens on Sunday night, because we need to see something good. I believe something good will happen. Of course, we'll find out when those 90 minutes are being played. So let's get ready for it, everybody. Let's go and have some fun. And let's all hope that we will see a positive result for the Red Bulls. Now, someone commented on Facebook about, you know, scoring a goal and still having this losing streak. It's not a positive outlook. Let me say this. Yes, it was frustrating to see them lose. But you know why I felt it was a positive moment that they scored the goal? Because they went through 337-plus minutes of not converting since the home game against Houston in May. Getting on the scoreboard, finally converting. Fine, it's Zubar, a defender. Still, he converted. That's a positive in my book. Did they not keep the result? Absolutely, that's not a positive. That's a negative. They couldn't get a point out of it. That is a negative. But at least they converted. They broke the scoreless streak. And if they did that, that's a positive. There are a lot of mental moments in a game that you need to look at. A lot of mental moments in the game you need to look at. Should they have gotten a second one? Yes. Should they have gotten a penalty? You know what? At first I thought, you know, that might not have been a penalty, or if it was a penalty, I don't think Salazar was going to call it because of the snow. But you know what? You got to say this. You look at it over and over, you know what? That is a penalty, and that should have been called regardless. Still, once again, that moment, that it came and went, unfortunately, just did not come in a positive way. But still, though, it was a positive when they scored. And once again, you have different steps to go from being all the way negative to enduring some positive and then getting over that hump and now going out there and doing the job you have to do. So all I can say is this. If you don't want to look at it as a positive, that's fine. That's fine. You have your own opinions, and of course I have mine. But I still feel that goal that Zubar converted, that's still a positive in my eyes. And I truly believe that's a positive step while the result was mean and cruel, I still feel it's a positive step. And that's how I feel about that. But once again, you got to find some positives in all these negatives. And while I agree that the typical statistics are just not something you want to look at, you know, over and over and over again, thankfully, that match, we didn't have to look at the statistics. We didn't have to look and see the possession numbers, how many crosses were completed, how many passes were completed, how many shots were taken, who had the most shots on goal, who had the most total shots. That was the game where you can throw those away. You didn't have to worry about it. And all you can do is just be positive that they actually scored a goal, and that's it. Alex Mule now. You know, Alex Mule right now, I have to give him congratulations on his first start. I believe that might be his second game, but first start in this match against Colorado Rapids. And you know what? He looked fantastic. Gave Lloyd Sam a breather, even though Sam did come in to the match. Still, you have to say this. You have to say that this kid is the future. Brandon Allen is also a future for this club. Still, all I can say is this. It's not funny anymore. They got to go out and they got to put on a better result. The performances have been good. There's no question about that. Unfortunately, it's not converting on chances or more than a chance. They got to go out now and they got to really put out a fantastic performance. And at the same time, they have to go out and they're going to have to convert some goals in better areas on the field, on the pitch. Because it's getting to a point where it's too ridiculous that they cannot score goals. And now they really got to score goals at home. That's what they got to do. And you know what, folks? This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to call it a night early. Rarely that happens, but unfortunately no other audio has been available for me for this moment. And you know what? All I can say is this. Is that they don't need to hear any more words from me. You don't want to hear any more words from me. Tonight's Monday. We got 6 days before the next match. And you know what? It's time that they start talking on the pitch. And it's time they start taking on and try to take out Orlando City. Let's hope that they can go ahead and do this. And let's hope and pray that we get Gonzalo Verón back on the field, because let's be honest, not having him on the field is really hurting them. And he is supposed to be that big addition that they brought over from Argentina. So let's see what happens. I want to thank my guests tonight, Robert Hay and Carter Krishnire, for talking about the article written by Ryan Rosenblatt. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. We're going to close this show early tonight and get ready for next week, and we'll see what happens. Thank you, everyone. As always, enjoy your football. Take care, and bye-bye for now.